Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 16, A Description of Jambudvip, Text 4. It's a long Sanskrit prose text, so I'll just try to pronounce the Sanskrit myself, and then I'll read the translation. Navai Maharaja Bhagavato, Rishi Ruvacha, Navai Maharaja Bhagavato, Maya Guna Vibhutehe Kash Dam Manasa Vachasa Vadigantum Alam Vibhudhayushapi Purushas Tasmat Pradhan Yenaiva Bhugoloka Vishesham Namarupa Mana Lakshnato Vyakyas Yamaha. Translation. The great Rishi Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, there is no limit to the expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's material energy. This material world is a transformation of material qualities, sattva-guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna, yet no one could possibly explain it perfectly, even in a lifetime as long as that of Brahma. No one in the material world is perfect, and an imperfect person could not describe this material universe accurately, even after continued speculation. O King, I shall nevertheless try to explain to you the principal regions, such as Bhugoloka, Bhuloka, with their names, forms, measurements, and various symptoms." Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The material world is only one-fourth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's creation, but it is unlimited and impossible for anyone to know or describe, even with the qualification of a life as long as that of Brahma, who lives for millions and millions of years. Modern scientists and astronomers try to explain the cosmic situation and the vastness of space, and some of them believe that all the glittering stars are different suns. From Bhagavad Gita, however, we understand that all these stars, nakshatras, are like the moon in that they reflect the sunshine. They are not independent luminaries. Bhuloka is explained to be that portion of outer space through which the heat and light of the sun extend. Therefore, it is natural to conclude that this universe extends in space as far as we can see and encompasses the glittering stars. Srila Shukadeva Goswami admitted that to give full details of this expansive material universe would be impossible, but nevertheless he wanted to give the king as much knowledge as he had perceived through the parampara system. We should conclude that if one cannot comprehend the material expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly cannot estimate the expansiveness of the spiritual world. The Brahma Samhita 533 confirms this. Advaita machutim anadam ananta rupam adyam purana purusham navayovanam cha. The limits of the expansions of Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot be estimated by anyone, even a person as perfect as Brahma, not to speak of tiny scientists whose senses and instruments are all imperfect and who cannot give us information of even this one universe. We should therefore be satisfied with the information obtained from Vedic sources as spoken by authorities like Shukadeva Goswami. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we are now entering into the chapters of the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that deal with the structure of the universe. These are not easy topics to comprehend, as we see in this verse. It says even someone with a lifetime and intelligence of Brahma is not able to completely understand everything there is to know about the whole cosmic manifestation. So what to speak of us? But we're being given information here in Srimad Bhagavatam through the Parampara system that is coming from perfect sources of knowledge, and we're getting not the complete picture, but what according to these sources we need to know. So this section is just beginning now, and it's going to go for several chapters, and then it'll go on to other topics. The Srimad Bhagavatam will go on to other topics. One thing I think it's worth noting is that right here in the beginning, in the last text, we learned that what's being presented is a description of a universal form. And at the end of this description, this again is stated in the verses, that we are getting a description of a universal form. Now, when universal forms are presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, and elsewhere, we often see that they are not something that can be perceived in full by the unaided material senses. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Arjuna, he asked Krishna, "Show me your universal form." And Krishna agreed, but he said, You cannot see it with your ordinary eyes, therefore I'm going to give you Divya Chakshusha. I'm going to give you divine eyes so that you can see this. And when he did that, the universal form was manifested. Now, the universal form that was manifested to Arjuna, it included some things that are visible to ordinary vision. You know, for example, the sun, the stars, everything. There were a few, some things mentioned like that. And of course, we can perceive those things, or at least certain features of those things, with our ordinary material senses. But there were other things that were included in that universal form that could not be perceived with the ordinary material senses. That was why Arjuna needed Divya Chakshusha, divine vision, in order to see the whole universal form. But as I said, there were parts of that universal form that were part of ordinary, you know, vision, but there were parts of the universal form that could not be seen by ordinary vision. We also see in the account in Srimad Bhagavatam when Child Krishna revealed his universal form to Mother Yashoda, that she went into some kind of trance state in which the universal form was visible to her. And that universal form included things, elements that were visible to her in her ordinary state of consciousness, but also, there were things that were not visible to her in her ordinary state of consciousness. She became quite bewildered by the whole thing until Krishna withdrew, you know, his potency by which he had displayed the universal form that he revealed to Mother Yashoda. And then she returned to her ordinary, you know, state of consciousness. So we have to keep that in mind, I would suggest, you know, as we're going through these next chapters. We're going to encounter some things in this universal form that is being described by Shukadeva Goswami to King Parikshit. We're going to encounter some things that we can perceive with ordinary vision, like the sun, the moon, the stars. But we're also going to encounter things that we don't see with ordinary vision, like Mount Meru, the Ring Islands, oceans of milk, liquor, things like that. But this shouldn't surprise us, because this is the nature of universal forms. The universal forms that are displayed, you know, to devotees in different circumstances, they reveal things that are not perceived by ordinary vision. So, some of the things that are mentioned, like the positions of the stars and planets in these chapters, they are the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving information that matches up with modern astronomy. And this will be shown in the Vedic planetarium that is being constructed in Mayapur. You know, actually, I'm part of a team of devotees that's evaluating the exhibits and models that are going to be part of that. And part of the planetarium is the Vedic temple of Vedic planetarium is going to be a model which displays the positions of the stars and planets according to the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the positions, the way it describes the movements of the planets against the background of stars, is pretty much what's there in modern astronomy. So that's one element of the fifth canto. But because it's a description of a universal form, it is also going to include things that aren't visible to ordinary senses. And we should expect this. If the fifth canto were just presenting what's visible to any ordinary person, there wouldn't even be any necessity for describing it, because everybody can see it anyways. The reason why this universal form is being presented in the fifth canto is because it contains things that we can't see with ordinary vision. Therefore, we have to be shastra chakshusha. There are certain things we can only see through the eye of shastra, which, according to the Vedic epistemology, is the highest form of knowledge. So, as we go through, you know, this fifth canto description, as I said, we're going to encounter things that we can see with ordinary vision. We're going to encounter things that we can only see through the eyes of shastra, through the parampara system, as being, you know, mentioned here. So, in the purport, there's a statement that the stars are like moons and that they're reflecting the light of the sun. Now, this is an interesting topic. And, you know, if we just look at what Srila Prabhupada says here, we may think about it in a certain way according to our normal way of looking at things. But we actually have to consider Srila Prabhupada's statements not in isolation, but in connection with other things he said about the same topic. about the sun, moon, and stars. And then we also have to consider what he says about these things within the larger perspective of the whole Vedic cosmology, the whole Vedic way of looking at the universe. So, just looking at this statement, we might think, well, the moon doesn't have its own source of illumination. It's just only reflecting light from the sun. But, there are some other statements that Srila Prabhupada has made about that. Let's see if I can find one here. So Srila Prabhupada's describing that in some statements that he makes that the moon itself has a kind of fire. For example, in a lecture he gave on the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in Mauritius, October 4, 1975, he said, in each Brahmanda, there are unlimited number of planets, stars, Ashesha, Vasudha, and Vibhuti Binam, and each planet is differently situated. Each planet has got specific atmosphere, specific arrangement. Just like the sun globe is fiery. The moon planet is very pleasing. There is also fire, but it is surrounded by cold atmosphere, therefore it is very pleasing. So, and there are several statements like this that Srila Prabhupada makes. And that means, if we want to take everything that Srila Prabhupada says about this topic into consideration, there are some statements where he says the moon has its own fire, which is illuminating, but it's coming out through a cold atmosphere, and therefore it's perceived as cold. So this is kind of like some higher level information that's being given. And there's several other quotes like that that I could read. I have them here. So if we want to say the stars are like the moon on the basis of what Srila Prabhupada says, and we take everything that Srila Prabhupada said into account, it's not necessarily that the stars don't have their own fire. Because if we want to say they're like the moon, well, the moon has its own illuminating fire. So if the stars are like the moon, then they also have their illuminating fire as well. But what does it mean when Srila Prabhupada says there's only one sun in the universe and everything is getting its light from the sun? I mean, there are statements like that. It's also said that, Srila Prabhupada makes several statements that the sun and all luminaries in this universe are getting their light from the Brahmajyoti, Krishna's effulgence. There are statements where Srila Prabhupada says the sun is reflecting the light of the Brahmajyoti. Now, just like he uses that word here too, reflect. But that has to be a special use of the word reflect, because the Brahmajyoti is outside this universe. This universe, according to the Vedic cosmology, is surrounded by layers of earth, water, fire, air, so that without the presence of the sun in this universe, there wouldn't be any illumination. And just like at night, we don't see the Brahmajyoti you know, shining through all the layers of the universe. You know, the coverings of our universe keep the light of the Brahma-jyoti out. I mean, directly. So there has to be some system. If the sun is reflecting the light of the Brahma-jyoti, it has to be reflecting it in some way that's a little different than the ordinary way that, you know, we think of, you know, light reflecting from a mirror or something like that. You know, sometimes ourselves we use the word reflection. We say, well, the sun reflects, I mean, the S-O-N, not S-U-N, the sun reflects the qualities of the Father. It doesn't mean, you know, like light in a mirror. It means somehow or other there's some connection between, you know, the Father and the sun, whereby the sun is reflecting the same qualities that are there in the Father. So we ourselves sometimes use this word, you know, reflect in a way that's a little bit different than in some other senses in which we use it. So if we want to say the sun is reflecting the light of the Brahma-jyoti, which it is, it's not reflecting it like the sun is a mirror and the Brahma-jyoti is shining on the sun and it's coming out. There's got to be some other way in which the energy of the Brahma-jyoti is being transmitted to the sun. Of course, one thing we have to keep in mind is that the whole Vedic cosmology is personal. There's a sun god, there's a moon god. Each celestial body actually has a personality associated with it. And then, of course, there's Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, who is present as the super soul in every atom. And the Brahma-jyoti is his effulgence. So there can be ways in which, you know, the energy of the Brahma-jyoti can be transmitted by Krishna, who is present as super soul within the sun, within all the planets, within every atom. So Krishna can transmit his energy in all kinds of different ways, just as we transmit energy in different ways that are invisible. You know, for example, right now this whole room is full of electromagnetic energy. You know, if you put a television set with a proper receiver in here, you can pick up that energy, although you can't see the energy being transmitted. Or, you know, you have your mobile phone. You know, there's energy being transmitted to your mobile phone so that you can call anybody in the world, or anybody in the world can call you. You cannot see the energy by which that is manifesting, but that energy is there. It's being manipulated, you know, by engineers and scientists and technicians so as to provide you with, you know, television service, mobile phone service, web service on your mobile phone, and all kinds of things. You can't see that energy, you know, going through the sky, but it's there. So, in some way, you know, that's not exactly specified, but in some way, the energy of the Brahma-jyoti is being transmitted to the sun, which then distributes that energy to the other luminaries in the universe, somehow or other. Now, one way to understand the idea that there's only one sun, you could say, well, but according to the astronomers, all the stars, they're also suns. Well, that may be true in one sense, but in another sense, we have to keep in mind the Vedic cosmology, that there are personalities associated with all of the luminaries. And only one of them is the king, Raja Samasta. The Brahma Samhita says, the sun is the king of all the luminaries in the universe. So, and we can see this just like, I mean, here's an example that might help us understand this. Say in a modern navy, they may have many battleships. And on one of them is the commander of the fleet, the admiral of the fleet. So that battleship that the admiral is on will be designated as the flagship. And there's only one flagship. I mean, there may be so many ships. There are also ships. But only one of them is the flagship. That means that is the ship that the admiral is on. And that admiral, he's giving orders to all the captains of the other ships in the fleet. So although they may be the same kinds of ship, because the admiral is on the flagship, he has the power to control. And the other captains, they draw their authority and power from the admiral. You know, that's how, you know, military works. And actually, you could say that the universe is sort of like a military organization because, you know, they are kshatriyas in a sense. You know, the sun is designated as the king of all the other planets. So although there may be many stars, and if you want to say the sun is also a star, but it's only one of those stars is the resident of the king of all the planets, Surya. So, now these things can be a little complex. And actually, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted his disciples, who were members of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, to study these things, you know, very carefully. And he said to the Bhaktivedanta Institute disciples, he said, I'm presenting the basic information, but I want you to present it in such a way that it can't easily be dismissed, you know, by, you know, critics and among the scientists and astronomers and things like that. So, these are, you know, as we can see here, it's being said, these are not easy issues to understand for even someone with a lifetime the length of Brahma. So what to speak of a Bhagavatam class, you know, one Bhagavatam class, you know, to get to the bottom of these things. So I just want to, as we're moving into this section, give some basic principles that may help us as we, you know, go through this material. First of all, understanding it's a description of a universal form, and that universal forms cannot be perceived in their entirety with ordinary vision. We have to consider everything, you know, Srila Prabhupada said about a particular topic in order to get as complete an understanding as we can, say, on this topic of you know, sun, moon, stars, reflecting. You know, we have to consider everything, you know, Srila Prabhupada said about the topic, and also put it within the context of the larger understandings that he's given us about the whole Vedic universe. So, I'll stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? Yes? There's a description by, well, the devotee, you didn't get a chance to put it, your question into the microphone, so I'll repeat it because there are people on the internet, you know, listening to the class. So they, a devotee was pointing out in her question that there are some statements that the moon is illuminated. To the microphone here. Okay, are we back online? Okay. So there, that I believe comes from a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'd have to, you know, check my notes on that, but it's he, you know, he described that there are flames on the moon that are like kusha grass. You know, you could just imagine that, you know, like a field of, you know, this grass, you know, like, so the flames are sort of like that, according to this description. But they're not something that's visible, you know, to the ordinary human eye. And when you get into, you know, descriptions that are being based on the universal form information that's being presented here in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to keep that in mind. But it's another example of information being presented that the moon has its own illuminating power. Now, it's getting that power ultimately from Krishna. You know, Krishna has his Brahmajyoti, his effulgence. The energy of that Brahmajyoti is being channeled somehow or other by Krishna into this dark material universe, and that is the ultimate source of the energy of the sun planet, which is the king of all the other planets, and somehow or other that energy is being transmitted by the sun to other luminaries like the moon, which manifests their own illumination. And just like these light bulbs here, they're not independently illuminating. It's not that each light bulb in the chandelier has its own independent illuminating power. At least I don't think so. Do they? They're getting their illuminating power from some central source. But that doesn't mean that each light bulb isn't shining. It is. But it's not independent. So your statement just can be seen in that light. That yes, the moon has its subtle flames. It has its own illuminating power, as do the stars and others. But where are they getting it from? Ultimately, they're getting it from Krishna. From his Brahmajyoti, they're somehow getting some of that energy. First, it comes to the sun, who is the king of all the planets, because their personalities involved, just like their personalities involved in generating the electricity that's being manifested in all these light bulbs in the temple. They're engineers somewhere who are transmitting that power here. So there are personalities involved in the transmission of this illuminating energy to the, you know, different illuminating bodies, celestial bodies that are visible in our universe. So I think this is one way that I would propose that we can put together all these statements that yes, the sun is providing the illumination for the stars and the moon, and yet they appear to have their own illuminating power. But because it's this personality, the sun god, is empowered by Krishna to distribute that energy, and the other luminaries are getting their energy from the sun, but they nevertheless may have their own illuminating power. Archita.
Hi, Bhopa. Well, thank you for a very nice setup to this section. You mentioned that you're part one of the devotees that's working on the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. How is that going? I mean, it seems to me it's a very, very difficult task because just of the distances involved. If you can depict the Earth at any appreciable size, then how can you see the rest of the universe? Because the distance is so vast. You need like 10 times, 100 times the size of my porch to show, you know, the stars out there and everything else that's in the universe.
Things may not be able to be presented exactly to scale. You know, if you want to depict, you know, the seven ring oceans and the Loka Loka mountain and the edge of the universe, you know, if you're going to have, I mean, if you do everything microscopically, you know, like have a tiny little Mount Meru, you know, like a pin, you might be able to keep it all within, you know, the temple building. So it may not be possible to put everything according to scale, just like sometimes, you know, you see, you know, drawings on television of certain things or magazine ads, and they have a little notice on the bottom, not to scale. You know, so, but these are things that are being worked out by the devotees who have been selected to deal with, you know, these things. And, you know, my position is as an advisor and evaluator, but I'm just one of several. And then other devotees are actually charged with coming up with the models and exhibits and things like that. So it's a whole arrangement. But somehow or other, I've been drafted into it. Yes, Makunamala Prabhu.
If we're going to take all of these statements in the larger context of everything that Srila Prabhupada said about, well, universal forms, then how do we put all the statements of the fifth canto regarding cosmology together with respect to Prabhupada's statement that the universal form is imaginary?
You have to look at all the statements about universal forms. There are different kinds of universal forms that are described. One is the kind that is directly revealed, like to Arjuna or Mother Yashoda. The other kinds of descriptions that we get are the kind that are being presented here, which is something that Shukadeva Goswami has not seen directly but has heard about from higher authorities. Another kind of universal form is presented for the benefit of impersonalists, where they are asked to meditate on certain features of reality and imagine a universal form. And that kind of universal form we could say is imaginary. But the universal form that's being presented here by Shukadeva Goswami is something he has heard from higher authorities. It's not something he's imagined, and neither have these authorities imagined it. They've directly perceived it. This is something different than the, as we said, we have to consider everything Srila Prabhupada said about a certain topic. So if we go through all the statements in Shastra and the statements of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas about universal forms, we'll see there are several kinds of universal forms. They said that the form that is imagined by people who are not able to conceive of personality being involved, they're asked to imagine a universal form. That we could say is imaginary. But the universal form that's presented to Arjuna, to Mother Yashoda, the universal form that's being described by Shukadeva Goswami on the basis of authoritative statements he has heard, these, I don't think we can say are imaginary in the normal sense that we would use the word imaginary. That's the way I think about that. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.